Do you know what the number one challenge right now facing organizations is? To ensure the mental and physical well-being of their employees. That's number one. In the old days, that wouldn't even have made the top 10. And this is according to HR organizations. The number one challenge is to ensure the mental and physical well-being of their employees. And the second challenge, of course, is maintaining employee engagement, productivity, and effectiveness, and so on. Well, guess what? You're not going to get number two right until you get number one right. And I feel like companies have done a fairly decent job in ensuring the physical well-being of their employees. What they haven't done well, however, is to ensure the mental and emotional well-being of their employees. And that's where they bring me in. I mean, that's what I do, right? I address that part. Here's how you take care of your employees emotionally and mentally.
Welcome to the Happy Engineer Podcast, the place where we help engineers to build your career, balance your life, and be happy. My name is Zach White, a former engineer now turned CEO, lifestyle engineering coach, and your host. I believe that success without fulfillment is failure. Join me each week as we bring you an inspiring leader or message to help you enjoy both. Thanks for investing time with me today. Now let's do this. Is it true that happiness is a choice? Or is there more to the story? Have you been branded as the ugly one, the stupid one, the fat one, or some other negative brand? How have those brands affected you? What's the difference between work-life balance and work-life integration, this phrase we hear so often? And most importantly, do you feel like you have been procrastinating your own happiness? This conversation is full of wisdom and actionable insights to a better life with the incredible Dr. Ilya Gogoris. Known by his friends and followers as the Happiness Doctor, Dr. Ilya is a coach, author, and speaker on happiness, positive leadership, and well-being, and over the last 25 years has helped thousands of people achieve happiness and fulfillment both in their professional and personal relationships through his coaching, his keynotes, and his writing as author of the number one bestseller, Seven Paths to Lasting Happiness. He's also co-author of The Seven Keys to Navigating a Crisis with our guest from episode 9, Coach Khan, which I highly recommend you go back and listen to episode 9 if you missed it. Engineers, if there is one doctor you want to visit, the happiness doctor is the one. Dr. Ilya changed my life in this conversation, and he will yours too. Get ready. You may have heard me say this before, but just in case you missed it, I have a special offer for you. If you are an engineer and you want to accelerate your career growth while balancing your life outside the office, let's connect so our team at Awaco can help you overcome the barriers and blocks you are facing today. I'd like to invite you as my friend to request a career clarity call, followed by a free one-on-one coaching deep dive with our client success team. We work exclusively with engineers just like you and have helped hundreds of engineering leaders reach their goals. Schedule a quick call now by visiting careerclaritycall.com. Again, that URL is careerclaritycall.com. It's free, and I promise it will be incredibly valuable. We look forward to talking with you soon. Welcome back, happy engineers. It's so great to be with you, and I am pumped to have a conversation with Dr. Ilya, the happiness doctor. We both have an appointment today with the right guy. So engineers, get excited. Dr. Ilya, I am super curious. If you could just take us back to the story of how you became the happiness doctor. I mean, this is the Happy Engineer Podcast and couldn't match up in a better way, but just tell us, like, where did you first become known as the happiness doctor?
Well, I'll go even farther back, and thank you for having me on the show, Zach. People have said, well, first of all, how did you become a happiness expert before you became the doctor? And honestly, it goes back to the very first day I was born. Now, I know this may sound a little weird. How is that? That's even possible. So I was born a long time ago in Athens, Greece, you know, back in the day where nobody was invited in the birthing room, right? There was no Snapchat, Facebook Live. Nobody was recording anything, right? It was just my mom and the doctor. So as the story was told me growing up in my family, I guess after I was born, my dad shows up kind of like a tough, you know, Greek guy, you know, whiskey, smoking, you know, so on, and comes up to the nurse and says, which one's my son? And I guess behind this little window, there were like five babies all wrapped up in the same old generic white blanket back in the day. They all looked the same. And my nurse comes up to the window. And at that moment, I had a smile on my face. So the nurse turns to my dad and says, your son, he's the happy one. So growing up, this is the story that I was told, right? Well, you came out of the womb happy. You're the happy one. So that was my, that became my brand, which is a great brand to have, obviously. Fast forward 25 years. Now I'm in graduate school getting my PhD in psychology. And the professor is talking to us about nature versus nurture. What contributes to what? Is it that generic predisposition that makes us who we are, or is it our environment? Yeah, of course, it's, you know, both contribute. So I had this terrible thought. I'm like, wait a minute. What if my dad shows up 15 minutes late, comes up to the same window, asks the same nurse the same question, which one is my son? And at that point, I have these terrible stomach pains, gas pains, and I'm screaming my head off and I'm crying. And the nurse turns to my dad and says, your son, he's the cranky one. And then growing up in my home, my family says, you know what? You came out of the womb cranky. You've always been a miserable little beep, you know?
So, oh, wow.
So why do I share this story is this, because we have all been branded. If you go back and think about how you grew up in your life, it usually happens early on in our family. Usually we get a brand. Now, having said that, there are plenty of brands that are positive and beautiful. Obviously, the happy one is at the top of the list. You can't get a better brand like that. But there are other ones. The creative one, the intelligent one, the smart one, the loving one, the adorable one, the princess, the athletic one. I mean, we can go on and on. So if you fall in any of that category and that you've been branded, count your blessings and say thank you. However, and in my experience, I work with thousands and thousands of people and travel all over the world and talk about corporate wellness and happiness and so on. I can tell you that far too many, actually the majority of people, have grown up with a negative brand.
Yeah.
Which of course, in that negative brand, you know, the way that they view themselves as a result of that has tremendous impact on their happiness and wellness and health and otherwise. And I won't go with all the terrible negative brands people have been branded, but I will tell you the three most common. And I know it's hard to believe, but trust me, the most common negative brands are the following: the ugly one, the stupid one, or the fat one. Now you might say, well, who in the world would actually say that to their kid? Believe me, there are far too many people. So about 5 or 6 years ago, I'm giving a talk at a women's conference in North Carolina, 500 women and myself, and I'm sharing this story that I've just shared with you. And I say, look, if you don't like your brand, today is the day that you may choose as an adult now to rebrand yourself. And basically empower the audience to say, you know what, I just don't. So out of the corner of my eye, this lady with gray hair in her 70s stands up and starts waving her arms. And she kind of throws me off because I'm like, I'm in the zone, right? I'm doing my thing. But at the same time, I can't ignore her because everybody's looking at her. So I'm looking at her too. So I stop my talk and I'm like, yes, ma'am. And she stands up and says, you know, I'm 70 some years old. And for the last 7 decades, I have been called, and this is my brand, fat, ugly, and stupid, and then some, like with an expletive next to it. And yes. I mean, Zach, you could hear a pin drop. I mean, he got so silent, so quiet. Personally, I don't know if I would have the strength to be that vulnerable and that open in front of 500 strangers. I don't think I could do it. So I admired her courage, honestly, to get up and do that. So I looked at her. She's looking at me. Everybody's looking at me like, now what's going to happen?
Right.
So I'm like, okay, ma'am, so what would you like your new brand to be? And her name was Leah, by the way, her first name. She goes, well, from now on, I want to be known as Princess Leah, kind of like the Star Wars thing.
Sure.
Immediately, I'm like, yes, your majesty. Like, I bowed down. I'm like, yes, your majesty, you know, like this. And people started to laugh in a very tense moment. became a very lighthearted moment, but also an important one. And why do I share this story? Because if a person in her 70s can change her brand, then anybody else can do it.
Yes. Right? Dr. Elia, I love that story. And engineers listening, you know, probably have a mix, right? A little bit of the, maybe they were the intelligent one and they got into engineering because they had the brain power, but also one or multiple of these negative brands is likely present for them as well. And I want to actually back up a little bit to your childhood experience then from 0 to 25, in that before that nature nurture conversation. Did you find yourself, you know, really experiencing what I'd say a heavily biased life towards happiness, or was it still a mixed bag for you and you had negative brands to overcome? Or what was your actual experience with growing up, you know, with that brand?
You know, people that have known me for decades, you know, I go back to Greece and I have friends that have been friends for 50 years. They'll say, you know, from the moment, from a little kid, you always had this happy disposition, like always saw the lighter side of things and had this positive attitude, like things work out. Now, that's not to say that I didn't get mad, I didn't get upset, I didn't cry, but for the most part, throughout my entire life, this is something that has come to me relatively easy. My wife, we met for 30 years. She goes, you love people so deeply and your heart is so open and you do that for so many people. How do you do that for all these years? And I said, I don't really know. It's like a reservoir of love and happiness just exudes. So, you know, what you see is what you get. I'm not saying I've had a perfect life, and I've had my ups and downs and tragedies. Of course, I lost my parents young and so on. But for the most part, I believe in the goodness of people. I believe in, I feel like I've been given a gift because I spent the first half of my career as a clinical psychologist in private practice. I feel like I've had this gift that I can see people's potential before they can see it in themselves and then help them to live in, and, you know, to get that out and to see it. You know what I mean? So I feel like that's kind of relatively easy to me, I would say.
Yeah. So if I was labeled the grouchy one, let's just pretend. So Zach, you know, I was the baby to the left of you.
Yeah.
Who was crying my eyes out, just being a grouch because my stomach hurt, or maybe I had no reason to cry at all. I just cried.
Right.
So if I grew up that way and maybe have lived an experience of life that really matches that, I have struggled with experiencing joy and happiness and love and fulfillment the way you described. You say happiness is a choice. And I love that. But the objection that pops in my mind is like, Dr. Elia, can I choose happiness and reach a level like what you have? Or is there no hope for me because I wasn't branded and born that way?
I love your question. And although happiness is a choice is a great slogan and it looks good on books and so on and on social media and memes and so on, the other 50% of that story is, which doesn't get as much visibility, and maybe it's not quite as sexy or as exciting, is that happiness is a skill set.
Wow.
Yes, it's a choice, but it's a skill set, meaning that if you do certain things consistently in your life, you will definitely find happiness. But it takes work. Yes, if somebody was born the happy one or whatever, there's a certain predisposition towards happiness. Well, good for you. But, you know, most people are not like that. So we can learn how to be happy. We just have to do certain specific things continuously on a daily basis or a weekly basis and so on. And if you do those things, you'll definitely find happiness. Guaranteed.
This is mind-blowing, right? This is a whole new category for me. I love it. Happiness to most of us as engineers is one of our 8-color crayon box of emotions. And we wish we could color with it more often, but for a lot of our listeners, it's rare that we experience this true, deep happiness. And to hear happiness is a skill set, there's work involved. It's like, okay, well, the natural next question for me as an engineer is, well, what's that? What is the work? How do you do that? So look, where do you begin? How do you get your head wrapped around this idea that it's not an emotion that is an effect of some mystical cause, but in fact, I can go be a proactive creator of that through my skills?
Yeah. And you know, my first book, 7 Paths to Lasting Happiness, that ended up becoming a number one bestseller. You know why? It's not like I said something different that hasn't been said before. That Aristotle, 2,500 years ago, the great Greek philosopher, said happiness is the whole purpose and meaning of life, the whole aim and end of human existence. Like, what a statement.
Huge.
So So people, you know, if you look at the reviews on Amazon and so on, people have actually said, people that have known me, like, and I wrote that book from my heart, not as a PhD. So I wrote it. So if you're 18 years old out of high school and you're starting your life or 85, you're going to get something out of it. You know what people have said? Like, Dr. Ilya, you know, yeah, it's a nice book. We like it. But it's not like you said something that Aristotle didn't say 2,500 years ago. But what we love about your book is at the end of every chapter, you have a couple of points for the reader to ponder and to consider. You ask us a couple of questions to answer. But more importantly, the last part is what you call take action, right? Because that's where the magic happens. And that's why I say it's a skill set. I can talk about what other seven paths to happiness, self-love, you know, self-care, gratitude, forgiveness and self-forgiveness, finding your purpose, feeding your spiritual self, being of service and be kind to other people and having healthy relationships. Well, we all know that. Now the question is, how do you do that? And both from my experience as a psychologist and then as a corporate executive coach and so on, I take people like, yes, forgiveness is important. You know what's even more important is self-forgiveness. There's no greater act of self-compassion than self-forgiveness. And people say, okay, well, that sounds great, but I don't know how to do that. So I physically take them. This is how you forgive yourself, step by step by step. We all know that gratitude is wonderful. There's no quicker way to feel happy than to be grateful, because physiologically you can't be grateful and depressed at the same time. You can't hold those space in your brain simultaneously.
Sure.
So yes, having an attitude of gratitude. It sounds great. It matches. It's a great little slogan again. It's easy to be grateful when things are going well. I go the extra mile because I feel like, Zach, you and I and everybody listening, we're all graduates from the same university, which I call the University of Adversity. And the older you get, the higher the degree. When you're younger, you're in elementary school. You get older, at some point you have a master's degree, and then you have a PhD, and then you have the older you get, when you got gray hair, you have faced so much adversity in your life. Now the question becomes, is it possible to be grateful in the midst of adversity?
Yes.
Is it?
Good.
Right? I mean, that's a real question. Can we be grateful in the midst of adversity? And what I have discovered is this, that the most successful people in life and the happiest people in life don't have less adversity than you and I do. They have the same human frailties, same weaknesses. They make the same mistakes, just like everybody else, except that they do three things differently than the rest of us. Number one, they take personal responsibility, meaning this is on me. Nobody put a gun to my head to make that decision. I own this, right? So there's no victim mode. I own it, number one.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, they learn from their mistakes. You know, just like Nelson Mandela said, he said, in life, either you win or you learn. There's no losing. As long as I'm either winning or I'm learning, there's no losing, right? So that's number two. And then the third thing that they do consistently, which personally I think is even more important than the first two, is that they have the ability to let them go. Meaning that what happened last year, I'm not going to care to do this year. Or as a matter of fact, what happened last month, I'm not going to care to do this month. Or even what happened yesterday into today. And how do they do that? After they take responsibility and they learn their lesson, is they have the ability to forgive themselves and let it go.
Yeah. So Dr. Ilya, I love this, these three steps. And so engineers, we're how people, right? We always want to know the process and the system. And maybe in a way, what I love about this approach, what you're saying, it aligns perfectly with how I coach at Awaco, and hey, we got to get into action. Knowledge by itself is not useful or powerful. It's knowledge that you implement and take action on that creates power in your life. And so would you be willing to get a little more specific with us on how to take action on this attitude of gratitude, for example? It's one of the paths to happiness in your book. And I highly recommend everybody go get a copy and read the book for yourself. But just to give some actionable nuggets, how do you do it? What's the actual step? Do I have to sit down and meditate? Do I need to get a journal? Do I like?
I think journaling actually does help. And listen, I could write down three things that I'm grateful every single day for 365 days and never repeat myself. Do you know that? If you just take the physical body, I can go through every organ that I have that works while I sleep. my heart that pumps, my brain that works, my fingers that, you know what I'm saying? It's endless. The gratitude list is endless. So what I recommend for people is every day, write three things down, bullet points, doesn't take more than, you know, 60 seconds, three things that you're grateful for. Some people like to do it when they first wake up before they brush their teeth, just like you put that grateful intention out into the world. But other people like to do it at the end of the day when they reflect back on their days. You know, what am I grateful for today? Honestly, I don't really care which way you do it as long as you do it, right?
Yes.
Again, why? Because knowledge without application is just education. You can read the top 10 books on happiness and highlight them and underline them to death. And then what do we usually do with those books? We put them back on the bookshelf when we're done, right? Mm-hmm. Never to be seen again.
Yes.
Okay. Well, now I'm more educated about happiness. I know a lot more, but my happiness level is not any higher. Why? Because I'm not doing anything about it. So it's not enough to just read and educate yourself. It's the application that matters.
This idea that gratitude is endless, I'm really struck by this. And what I'm curious for your perspective on, Dr. Elia, is why is it that so many people have a hard time finding those things in their life that, you know, while you and I are talking, it's like, okay, yeah, sure. I'm grateful for my brain that's working, for my lungs that are breathing. And, but you know, I've coached a lot of engineers and I'll ask the question sometimes, what's something you're celebrating? What's something you're grateful for right now? And a lot of times we come up blank. There's nothing. Why is that? Why is there such a bias towards this area of gratitude being endless? We have a block to accessing that.
Because again, it's a skill set. Engineers are very good at so many things. You can name them one by one. Brilliant people. I work with a lot of engineers, by the way, in organization, and brilliant people. Sometimes, however, your strength, if you overdo it, can become your liability. If I always stay in my head, because gratitude comes from the heart. So we have, and I don't remember who said this, but the longest journey in the world is not from here to the moon or from here to some distant star. It's from my head to my heart. So I'm a very heart-centered person. And the older I get, the more heart-centered I want to be. More open, more sensitive, more vulnerable, more loving, because I feel like that's where my happiness lies. That doesn't mean that I'm neglecting my brain or that I don't read and learn new things, because that's the other thing that contributes, I think, to happiness is a continuous thirst for knowledge. Michelangelo, he and Leonardo da Vinci are the pillars of the Renaissance movement, right? At the end of his life, he was being interviewed and they're like, oh, great master, you know, tell us something that, you know, wise or whatever. You know what he answered? He said, I am still learning. Who said that? Michelangelo. This is after David, like after he did all that stuff, right? So to me, if Michelangelo at the end of his life is still learning, man, I hope I learn until I take my last breath. Continue to learn. So I'm not neglecting the brains, what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But I come from the heart. I'm looking outside my window right here in my backyard. Beautiful green trees, beautiful sky. I'm looking at my green lawn. Now, these are three things that I'm grateful right now. Just glancing over. That's it. You know what I'm saying? Gratitude is everywhere, but we have to practice it so it becomes so easy, like it is, like I just did it for you as an example, right?
So you brought up a really good point around overusing a strength becoming a liability, and engineers are great at using our heads. And, you know, I've personally spoken with hundreds, maybe thousands even, of engineers, especially if you count social media and the interactions that happen online. And there is a huge percentage of them who are very unhappy. And I'm curious, this connection between the engineer being in our head and the fact that happiness and gratitude and these things that we're talking about today come from the heart, it makes a lot of sense that there would be a gap there. So can you tell us more about, like, what does it really mean to travel that distance from the head to the heart? What is that journey like? What does it mean to be from the heart or in your heart? That language is kind of coachy. It's sort of hard to wrap. Here, I'm in the engineer in me. I was going to say wrap my head around. You know, it's like there's such a bias toward that. Could you just tell us more about?
Yeah, but why is there a bias? Because we have been rewarded for our brains. You get good grades. I got 4.0. I got into a great school. I went to, you know, master's degree, PhD. So there's a lot of reward that comes, societally speaking. One of the greatest blessings of the pandemic is which I call basically, I feel like this giant finger from the sky came down upon humanity and pressed the pause button. And it just paused everybody dead on our tracks. What has happened as a result of that over the last 18 months, because my second book was about the pandemic and navigating challenges and crisis and so on. And having talked to, I would probably say, even though my speaking engagement got canceled last year, obviously after the pandemic, I had the opportunity to speak to more people across the globe on this little, you know, camera Zoom, probably between 40 and 50,000 people across the globe, right?
Wow.
And what I've gathered from that is this, that people all of a sudden began to recognize what's really important. Not so much the achievements or the degrees or the raise or the position or the letters after my name, but really my connection with people that I love and care the most. And I think that's a wonderful thing. There's actually a spiritual awakening happening across the globe. And I'm not talking about here in the United States alone, India, Africa, South America, Europe, where people want to live their lives a little bit more mindfully. And they want to live their lives spending more time with people that they care about and they love. And where, yes, work is important and work provides food on the table and, you know, and money equals freedom. I mean, it's not, you know, of course, but it's, I feel like people are going to be a lot more balanced, where work-life integration becomes more important to them, where before they were like just workaholic, providing, achieving, and so on, and then by being miserable. I don't think we're meant to endure to the end in this life miserably until we cross the finish line. I think this life is meant to be lived to the fullest.
Yeah.
And a big portion of that is our relationships that we have with ourselves and others. And to serve others, because obviously that's another path to happiness, is to serve from your heart, to be of service, to be kind. You know, all these things matter, and they matter more now than they ever have before, ever.
Yes, yes. Dr. Ilo, you used a really key phrase that has come up before in this podcast and with other guests, that work-life integration. And one thing that I've seen, unfortunately, for a lot of engineers who I coach, is that the pandemic created some awareness of those things that are most important, but it's also created conditions where they're working more than ever and they feel more imbalanced than ever. And so can you talk a little bit about what you mean by work-life integration? Maybe how is it similar or opposed to the classic phrase of work-life balance, and just what we're facing in the world today?
I just don't think that phrase work-life balance is accurate. I don't think, you know, because balance implies that it's like it's balanced. I don't think we ever achieve that. So I feel like just having that word out there, people feel like a failure. Well, I'm never going to have work-life balance. What I like about work-life integration is that it allows for some flexibility, right? And yes, there are people that have worked from home that are, because they don't have the 5 o'clock, it's time for me to get in my car and drive home, that they stay up and they work late into the night and actually are overworked. The more enlightened companies who monitor the computers, say, I'm shutting your computer down at 5 o'clock. If I see an email from you at 10 o'clock at night, you'll be in trouble. Spend time with your family. Spend time on some self-care. Spend time, you know, those are the enlightened leaders. And because I work a lot with senior leadership, a lot of HR directors and so on, when people started working from home and they're like, well, I don't know what they're doing. And I don't see them, but I feel like I need to check in with them. I said, yes, you need to be checking in with your folks on a weekly basis, if not more frequently. But don't get on a Zoom call and say, Zach, how are you doing? If you ask them like that, they're not gonna tell you the truth. Close the door, tell them, and lean into the camera and say, Zach, how are you really doing? And how's your family? And how's your loved ones? And is there anything I can do to help you or the company? What do you need from? And if you want to take some extra credit homework, go as a leader, go above and beyond even doing that, lean closer to the camera and say, by the way, you know what? My kids haven't gone to school for 9 months. It was driving me and my wife crazy. I've been depressed. I've been stressed out. I've been really anxious. So I can relate. When you have that kind of vulnerability as a leader, guess what happens? Now you bond with your people. Because just asking how they're doing and kind of cold like that, you're not going to get any answer. People are not going to open up to you. So you have to walk the talk be more open, be more vulnerable as a leader. And as a result, you create a more trusting relationship with your folks and your employees, and you'll see miracles happen. As a matter of fact, they'll work harder than they ever have before because now they feel like you've got their back.
So for the engineer listening on the podcast, you didn't see Dr. Elia's body language during this. Go catch it on the YouTube channel if you want to revisit these couple of minutes, but really impactful what's happening here. And I also know a lot of people are going to say, hey, where are these enlightened companies that you're talking about, Dr. Elia? Like, it's not like that for me at all. My boss is completely, you know, doesn't care. I don't feel like he or she has my back. We're being challenged to work even longer hours. We're being forced to work weekends. And like, maybe that experience you described is nothing like what the listener is experiencing. If they're in that situation where, you know, I'm trying to integrate Dr. Elia, but it's not working. Like, I just feel stuck in this environment that isn't allowing me to live the way I want and the lifestyle that fits for me. What should someone be thinking about, or how do you act in that situation? What do you do?
Yeah, and I just work with senior leaders, so it goes down. Even what you just talked about, let's say you're asking your folks to work 14 hours a day because you had to shut down the manufacturing plant for 2 months because, you know, and you're behind. If you're asking them to work harder because they're from home, you have to be more transparent as a leader and tell them the why. And what is the why? I love my employees. I don't want to have to lay off 20% of my at the end of this month. Because I don't want anyone, you know, I want us to stay together, to go through this crisis together. So I'm asking you to work a little extra because, and this is the reason why, because I don't want to lose anybody. I don't want to have to make those tough decisions. I want everyone to have a paycheck the following month. This is the reason why I'm doing that. Not because I want to be greedy and have to make billions of dollars. So that's not the reason why. It's because I want to keep us all together until we get through this crisis and we can go back to some. That's an enlightened leader.
Yeah,
but he has to explain the why behind that. It's not because we want to hit our numbers. Why do we need to hit those numbers? Because I don't want to have to let anyone go because I care about them and their families. Does that make sense? No.
I love that. And what I'll even take it one step further for the listener: if you're not the leader, and you don't know the why, ask the question.
Yes.
Right. Take that personal responsibility Dr. Elia mentioned earlier to say, if I'm being challenged to work and it's not fitting in my lifestyle, or you know, the 12 and 14 hour days are creating a burnout in my life, step out of your comfort zone and have that conversation with your leader and say, hey, you know, I want to be a part of this team and contribute and create value here, but what you're asking of me is creating a big conflict in my personal life. What's happening here? Why is this what we need to be doing? And understand, go get that understanding, because I'm with Dr. Elia 100%. It's important for the leadership to be asking for the things that are actually needed.
And you know, I call those conversations, you know, hot. And that's what I teach when I do my seminars and my retreats. I teach hot communication, which is honest, open, transparent. Honest, meaning that, and if you come from the hard place, again, it's like, I think most people say, you know what, this is causing me a lot of stress in my home and it's not sustainable. Do you know what the number one challenge right now facing organizations is? To ensure the mental and physical well-being of their employees. That's number one. In the old days, that wouldn't even have made the top 10. And this is according to HR organizations. The number one challenge is to ensure the mental and physical well-being of their employees. And the second challenge, of course, is maintaining employee engagement, productivity, and effectiveness, and so on. Well, guess what? You're not going to get number two right until you get number one right. And I feel like companies have done a fairly decent job in ensuring the physical well-being of their employees. The mask, the social distancing, wash your hands, not as many people in the room, and so on. I think they've done really well so they can keep their businesses open. What they haven't done well, however, is to ensure the mental and emotional well-being of their employees. And that's where they bring me in. I mean, that's what I do. I address that part. Here's how you take care of your employees emotionally and mentally.
Dr. Elia, the idea of mental health is, for a lot of engineers that I work with, something we really don't spend a lot of time on. Like, what does it mean to take care of my mental health. Can you just, at a high level, if you were stepping in and coaching an engineer to understand what is mental health really, how would you
describe it? And I'll share something with you that you can, a PDF, which is for my second book, I created a personal health assessment, 20 questions that looks at your physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual well-being. And it really takes like 2 minutes to take. But it gives you a plethora of information. By the way, I take this personal health assessment myself on the first day of every month, myself. It's almost like a checkup. You know, you go, you grab your pulse. You're like, how am I doing? You know, and those 20 questions, your answer from a scale of 1 through 5, 5, I'm doing excellent, 4, very good, 3, I do it sometimes, you know, 2, rarely, 1, nothing, never. Now, if you score yourself 4s and 5s, pat yourself on the back and say, man, I'm doing great. If you score a 3 in any of those questions, by the way, 3s are normal. 3s means I'm doing it sometimes, but there's room for improvement, okay? But if I score a 1 or a 2 in any of those questions, those are red flags, because those are definitely detrimental to your health and to your happiness. So those I would take seriously. And that's how I do it. I just don't want to have any 1s and 2s. If I have 3s, that's fine. That's normal. And 5s are almost like perfection. There are a few. If I can be between 3s and 4s, I'm doing really well. And wow, and I can share that with you, and you can put, I mean, honestly, yeah. I've shared that with tens of thousands of people across the globe. So use it, share it with your audience, and have them take it. It takes 2 minutes, but it gives you a snapshot. You know, maybe physically I'm taking care of myself better, but mentally and emotionally I'm not this month. Or yes. Maybe, you know, I'm pretty sharp mentally and I'm taking care of, but I've neglected physical, you know, I'm not sleeping enough, I'm not getting enough exercise, my diet's not good, whatever. It just gives you an idea of where you're at. That's all. It's your own personal self-assessment. It's not a test. It's not like you pass or fail. You don't have to share it with anybody. It's just information for yourself.
Yeah. Thank you so much for this offer. And for the listener, we'll definitely put a link to this PDF in our show notes and make that available to you. And what I also love, Dr. Ely, is that you said, even for yourself, the creator of this list, you're checking in every single month. And this is an area as systematic and process-oriented as engineers are. It's something I see over and over again, that the recognition that one set of questions, one check-in, one session with a coach is not the end game. It's about this rhythm of self-assessment and constant improvement, which we do all day at work in our jobs. We get paid to come up with these consistent, never-ending improvement projects and always making things better in engineering. And then we don't take that same mindset into our life. And I really love that, just to say, hey, whatever it is, if it's Dr. Ely's 20 questions, if it's something else, that you have a rhythm of constantly looking at your work-life integration, your happiness, your mental health, and consistently checking up and then taking action based on what you see.
And basically, you're tweaking stuff. I mean, it's not like I'm not saying that major personality overhaul. I'm not saying, oh, 20 areas of my life I have to do. No, pick one, maybe two for this month. And say, okay, I'm going to focus a little bit more consciously and mindfully in these areas, because I don't want them to be 1s or 2s. I got to move to at least sometimes I'm doing this, if not more often, right?
This is great.
If you think about it, these are, you know, we're talking about micro habits. So yes. If I do something differently today and I'm consistent over the course of the next 365 days, I'm going to be in a completely different place. And that's just changing one thing. And I can give you a practical, real example for myself. Prior to the pandemic, I used to walk 3 days a week for an hour, 3 miles and so on, because I got gray hair and I need movement. It's not that I have to do. Well, as my own stress level increased, you know, and I had taken my family, extended family, clients, you know, friends and so on, I realized that's not enough. So since last April, we're talking about it 14 months ago, I've started to walk every single day, 7 days a week, no matter what. And what's happened is it went from something that I have to do to something that I want to do, because wow. I've seen the benefits. I feel like I'm healthier now physically than I was 15 years ago. And I've done it, come rain or shine, no matter what. I walk every single day for 3 miles a day. And I don't always take my phone with me either, which is the second thing that I'm working on. Ideally, I want to walk every day without my phone. I'm at 50% right now, which is really hard for me because I'm addicted to my phone. But at least every other day, I don't take my phone and I walk and I look at nature. I partake of the sunshine, the vitamins from the rays of the sun, the beautiful blue skies, the trees, the animals, the chirping that the birds are bringing. And that feeds my soul, feeds my mind and my heart. And of course, my body, I move. So I'm healthier now than I have been. That was one habit that I changed 14 months ago. And you know what? Now that the pandemic seems to be on its way out a little bit, we're doing a lot better. Everything has opened up, at least where I live here. I'm not planning on changing that. I'm not going back to three times a week. I'm going to continue doing this because I have seen its benefits. What's the difference? Consistency.
Yeah. This is really a word of encouragement for the engineer listening. You don't have to completely change your life tomorrow to be happier. You need to identify these micro habits and the practices and skills of happiness and just be consistent to make those little changes every day. Is there any micro habit of happiness? We talked about gratitude earlier, walking now. If there was a third, Dr. Elia, that you would say, hey, if you're looking for a place to start, here's a micro habit that's really impactful.
Yeah, the physical ones are easier to identify, but I would also say, you know, I'm going to go back to the forgiveness aspect. Awesome. Because, you know, in my experience, Zach, I think most people wake up every morning and before they get out of bed, brush their teeth and put makeup on and get in the car and drive to work or whatever, they put on a backpack that weighs about 100 pounds. And this backpack is full of from little pebbles to rocks to big boulders, basically, in which are symbolic of resentments, anger, disappointments, lack of forgiveness, and so on. And that's how they walk throughout the day, burdened by their past. The goal in life is to wake up every morning and there's no backpack because it's a clean slate, it's a new start, right? And I can go live my life just today. I can't do anything about yesterday or last month or anything like that. And this is something that comes easy to me. I'm Greek. So Greeks don't feel too much guilt. We're like, eat, drink, and be merry. So like, forget about it, you know? So that's part of, sort of cultural too, but it's also part of my personality too. The choices I make today will determine my tomorrow. My past has nothing to do with it, right? So be in the present, choose wisely, have a positive attitude, help other people, because I think that's the big part of happiness is to extend ourselves to others and get outside of ourselves in some ways, right? And practice gratitude and forgiveness, practice self-care in those four areas that I talked about. And, you know, I'll share the PDF with you guys. Yeah. Very easy. But again, what are you doing about it?
This picture of the backpack is really powerful. I want the listener to go ahead and put that in your mind's eye and recognize that even today, right now, listening to this conversation, odds are really, really good that you're carrying a heavy burden.
And how heavy is your backpack, right?
I could tell you, I've felt it. There's days where I choose to bring all of that garbage from the past with me. And there's days where I choose to leave the past in the past. And right. It's a significant difference. And so as far as these micro habits, to wake up and make that decision that I'm going to live today without bringing that backpack along and just go and enjoy the present and create my future. That's a huge, huge takeaway. I love that. I love that picture. Dr. Lee, I want to go 1,000 more directions, but I want to be respectful of your time and we want to land the plane here. And I mentioned earlier, and I say this for all our guests, great engineering, it's like great coaching in that questions lead and answers follow. And the quality of our questions matters. So for the engineer listening to this conversation who wants to be happy, what is the best question that you would lead them with?
Sure. You know, remember when we talked about earlier on that knowledge without application is just education. So in life, it doesn't matter what we know. What matters is what do we do with what we know? So, of course, the question that follows that is, what will you do differently as a result of listening to this wonderful conversation that I've had with Zach? What will you do differently? And the last statement, which is not a question, is, and this is my biggest download from the last 18 months, is this. Do not procrastinate your happiness, meaning don't wait for when I get a raise or when I retire or when the kids leave the house or when we go on vacation or when I do. I'm in the right relationship, or when, forget all the whens. There are no guarantees about anybody that we're going to be here next month. So live your best life now, live your happiest life now, and remember that it is a skill. Yes, it's a choice, but it's also a skill set.
That's amazing. That's amazing. What will you do differently as a result of this conversation, as a result of what happened to you this morning, as a result of what you learned yesterday? What will you do differently? I love that. And don't procrastinate your happiness, engineers. Let's take action now. Go practice the skill set and make the choice. Dr. Ely, thanks a ton for being here. I know that people are going to want to hear more from you and get connected with you. So can you share with us what's the best way to get more from the happiness doctor in our lives?
Yeah, please connect with me on LinkedIn and share that we met on Zach's podcast, Ilya Grigoris, the happiness doctor on LinkedIn. That's one place. And the other one, if you want to know what I do in my programs and my coaching, is go to dreliagrigoris.com. And that's my website. And you can find whatever you need over there, my contact info and so on.
Awesome. I can't say enough, about just how great Dr. Ely's content and his as a person and a leader in this space. The first time we ever talked, it was just supposed to be a quick 5-minute introduction, and Dr. Ely just wisdom bomb after wisdom bomb around life and this idea of how to create something amazing that leads to our happiness and fulfillment. So again, for engineers listening, go look this guy up, buy the book, and just start taking action and making that choice. Dr. Ely, thank you again so much for your time today. It's really been a pleasure.
Thank you, Zach. It's really been a pleasure with me too. You have a delightful countenance and a brilliant mind. And I do so many podcasts, as you know, on a weekly basis. It's always the interviewer, the questions you ask and how it flows that makes my life enjoyable. So I loved being on your show. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Let's do it again sometime.
You got it.
Hello again, my friend. It's Zach White, your host and your coach for this wild ride called career growth. I hope you're enjoying the show. By the way, if you feel like an overworked and undervalued engineer who wants to find better balance and get paid what you're worth, I want you to get started today by checking out the Productivity Power Laws, my free video short course at productivitypowerlaws.com. If you're new here or you haven't done this yet, this is definitely the first step to get started in applying these principles to your life. So head over to productivitypowerlaws.com and grab your free gift from me and the team at Awaco. What do you think about that? Dr. Ilya Grigoris, the happiness doctor. That was a really fun conversation for me. And the engineer in me, that part of me that still is completely stuck in my head, is challenged by some of what Dr. Ilya brought. And stick with me for a few minutes because I want to unpack some of the key points and the actions that we need to take in our lives as a result, and also give you a little secret to that ending comment that Dr. Ilya finished with about not procrastinating on your happiness. This is something that comes up a lot in the coaching that I do with engineers at all levels from all around the world. And I want to give you a little secret in how to approach that. If you feel like you've been procrastinating on your happiness, then stick around. At the end here, I'm going to give you a little secret to success on that. But first thing, how have you been branded? Dr. Ilya said that we have all been branded. Were you the happy one? Or were you the ugly one, the stupid one, or the fat one? This is tough. This is a tough thing to look at. And I want you to be honest with yourself. How have you been branded? What is that identity that you've held on to from childhood all through your life? And is that brand serving you? Is it taking you toward the life and the career that you dream about? Or are you anchoring your life in a brand that you were given by people around you early in life, and it's been holding you back since day one? This is a really important concept. And if you feel held back by a brand that you're the stupid one, or you're the ugly one, or you're the one who's not allowed to have a happy life or nice things for whatever reason, because of some failure that you made or some mistake that you made early in life, I want you to know, letting go of that old brand and choosing the brand for your future, just like that lady did that Dr. Elia shared from his story in that conference where she came up and in her 70s said, "My whole life, I've been the ugly, stupid, fat one, and today I'm choosing to be Princess Leah." That's amazing. What are you going to choose in your brand from today forward? Maybe it's just to double down on the positive brand you already have. But for some of you, I know this is a moment where you need to look honestly at yourself and let go of the brand that has been holding you back. And it's not something that you just listen to me say that and it's done. Remember this whole conversation, what did we talk about? Happiness is also a skill set. It takes work. It takes mindset work and coaching and support to have breakthrough and transformation in your life. So reach out and get connected with Dr. Elia. Get connected with myself and our team at Awaco to support you in that transformation and making it permanent. But it starts today. Let go of those brands that are not serving you, and let's make the choice to live into the brand of being the happy one. I want to talk about gratitude for a second. I love what Dr. Elia said. You know, grab his book, The 7 Paths to Lasting Happiness, and dig into all 7. But one of those was to be grateful. And we talk about gratitude a lot. It's come up on this podcast a lot. And I just want you to know, as cliche as that may seem, it comes up a lot because it is that important. And as engineers, I want you to hear very clearly what the happiness doctor gave us, that gratitude comes from the heart. You must get out of your head and into your heart to experience a life of gratitude, to have that consistent attitude of gratitude. That is a heart activity, not a head activity. And the longest journey that there is from the head to the heart, especially for engineers. So I want you to take this seriously. And if you don't know how to make that journey, if the idea of thinking from the heart versus thinking from the head, if you don't have clarity on what that looks like and how to develop that in yourself, the true emotional intelligence to get into your own heart, then we definitely need to connect, because that journey may be the most important one that you take. And the journey of gratitude is endless. Gratitude is truly endless. So if you are not able to come up with 10 things right now that you are grateful for, then we need to make that journey into your heart to where that becomes easy and automatic and you get connected with that part of yourself as one of those key paths, those key actions and practices and skills of living a happy life. Let's jump back into the career space for a second, because there was a key point made about hot conversations that I absolutely don't want you to miss. Hot, H-O-T, honest, open, and transparent conversations. Hot conversations are the nemesis of most of the engineers who I coach and work with and talk to from any area. Doesn't matter if they consider themselves introverted or extroverted. It doesn't matter if you're a manager or an individual contributor. It doesn't matter if you're a director or vice president. Hot conversations, those honest, open, transparent conversations, is one of the key difference makers on creating results in your career. If you want to break through to that next level, if you want to get promoted, if you want to increase the size of your team, if you want to drive results faster, whatever it is, I guarantee it that there is a hot conversation or two or 10 between you and that outcome. So go ask yourself the question right now, who do I need to have a hot conversation with? Who have I been inauthentic with? What have I been keeping to myself and building up resentment and bitterness about it instead of having the hot conversation? If you'll do that, you will create faster results and breakthrough in your life. You may need to have a hot conversation with yourself being honest, open, and transparent about where you're at and how unhappy you currently are. And if that's the case, take action on that as well and stop lying to yourself. We're going to make that PDF of the 20 questions Dr. Elia mentioned available to you. That's another action you can take right away. Go grab the show notes, visit our website, find this episode, and download that PDF. That is going to be a really useful tool for you. And whether you use that or, you know, my clients, we go through what we call the playbook rhythms, and we provide a set of questions that we use on a daily, weekly, quarterly, and yearly basis. But get something in your life for recurring reflection and action from what you learn, which leads to the ending question. The happiness doctor left us with a question I believe as an engineer you should really be encouraged by. What will you do differently? I mean, this is our life. This is what we do for our career, is go ask the question, as a result of this outcome, as a result of this data, as a result of this test, as a result of our consumers' feedback, what is happening now? What can I learn from that? And what will I then do differently? So what will you do differently as a result of listening to this podcast? Now, I promised I would give you a secret about procrastination on happiness. You may relate to this, but a lot of people I talk to, and even for myself, when we talk about happiness, we're tempted to immediately say, well, Zach, there's a lot more to life than happiness. That's not the end-all be-all. Aristotle was wrong when he said, you know, that happiness is the ultimate goal of our lives and the chief aim of what we're here to create. You know, it's not just about happiness. And I get that. I understand that point. But we use that as an excuse not to take the actions that Dr. Elia brought us today, or the actions that you may simply know you need to take for yourself if you want those results, but you're not taking them. And the reason that we procrastinate on happiness, on action in your life that will lead you to happiness, is because as engineers, we have made this out into such a complex formula that we're not able to solve, that we have consistently pursued but never quite, you know, solved it completely, and it becomes this big thing. This is really common for engineers. We get in our head and we make something more complicated than it has to be, and because it seems big or nebulous or just unclear in general, we don't do anything because we cannot connect the dots from y equals f of x and the transfer function on how to create this and the cause and effect. And listen, if you want to beat this procrastination in your life on taking action to be happier, here's the secret. Find the smallest, most simple, easiest, trivial, negligible thing that's going to make you just one tiny bit happier and take action on it right away. Don't worry about quitting your job and finding something you're more passionate about and moving to a new city or to a new state where the weather is nicer, or, you know, changing everything in your life so that you can become the ultimate happiest person on the planet. No, don't make it big and complicated. Find the smallest possible action that you can do right now, and then do it again and again and again. And I don't just mean do that same thing over and over. What I mean is continue to make the decision to take action on that next smallest thing that's going to bring happiness, fulfillment, joy, love into your life. Don't make it complicated. Do something small right now. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I looked outside just now and the sun is out and it's gorgeous, and I know that my day will feel happier if I get outside and go for a short walk. So I'm about to wrap up this podcast 10 minutes earlier than planned, and I'm going to go outside for just 5 to 10 minutes before my next meeting, and I'm going to think about how great it is that I have this time to walk around in the sunshine. Small, simple, easy. Take action today. Do not procrastinate on your happiness. And those small 5-minute walks in the sunshine are going to compound and compound and compound to where you're taking those big, bold actions for incredible quantum leaps in your happiness down the road. But don't worry about those now. Start small, quit procrastinating. You got this. Hey, it's been an absolute pleasure to be with you. I hope you took some really useful insights from Dr. Elia. Check out his book, check out his website, and as always, get out of your comfort zone and take action. Let's do this. My friend, that's all we've got for this episode of the Happy Engineer Podcast. Thank you again for investing your time with me today. If you're like me, then maybe you'll take some notes and share this episode with your fellow engineers. Why? Because it will help you learn deeper, remember these insights, and take action. So share this episode with two or three friends just like you who are committed to building their career. Lastly, make sure to link up with us at oasisofcourage.com. Grab our free tools for career growth there in the Resource Hub, and schedule a free call with our coaching team today. Please just share this podcast with anyone who you think might enjoy it. Until next time, remember to crush comfort, create courage, and let's do this.